comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us this evening for the very first time. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. You need to know that over at my website, you can subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. It is called the K-Files e-zine. It's absolutely free, no strings attached, and it takes maybe 10 seconds to subscribe. And then after you subscribe, if you, for any reason, decide that you want to unsubscribe, you can do so at any time. Every edition of the K-Files e-zine has an unsubscribe link. Most people stay with us forever, but you can unsubscribe. And we don't share the email list with anybody, all right? So you're not going to be spammed as a result of subscribing. So go on over there and subscribe. If you happen to be listening and or watching the show on our player, on our website, there's a link right there on the player. It says K-Files. Just click it, and it'll take you to the subscription page. Hey, you remember last night, it was open line night, and we were talking about this tunnel system that is under the pyramid in Mexico City. The ancient Aztec pyramid that's there in Mexico City. And we were talking about how it had been sealed up by the Aztecs, and then the city had been burned for whatever reason, and then they just disappeared. A great mystery. And in the 1970s, an archaeologist discovered that tunnel system under the pyramid. After digging into it, shortly after discovering it, sealed it up, and no one has done anything with it or reopened it. Nothing. Nothing's been done with it since the early 1970s. Well, today, I talked with a guy who was there in the early 1970s when the tunnel was open and has been in the tunnel. He's going to be telling us about that on Friday night. So that's going to be an interesting thing. You want to be sure and be here. I got a chance to talk briefly with him today, and I think it's going to be really interesting to hear what he's got to say about all that. Tomorrow night, my guest is going to be George Filer, and you want to be sure that you don't miss that show. George Filer has been for years publishing something called Filer's Files, and it's accounts of UFOs, reports of UFO sightings and encounters from all over the place. It's one of the best UFO newsletters out there, and you want to be sure and be here tomorrow night as we get a chance to chat with George Filer. Tonight, my guest is going to be Jerry Wills. Now, Jerry is a real-life explorer. He's about as close to a real-life Indiana Jones as you're going to get. And, you know, one of the things that Jerry told us about in his last visit with us here on this show was he told us about an expedition he took into South America, where he discovered some artifacts of ancient civilizations. He's going to do that again. He's going to talk to us about some more of that tonight, an upcoming expedition, as well as I've got some questions that you asked by email after he had been on the show. We'll be back with Jerry Wills right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network
is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. And we are back. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. Many of you will remember his previous appearances here on the Kevin Smith Show. Very, very interesting information. If you're interested at all in ancient civilizations, if you're interested at all in some of the mysteries of those ancient civilizations, particularly, you know, the stories about ancient giants and the stories about connections between the ancient civilizations and star people, you got to be interested in Jerry Wills' accounts of his expeditions, because that's where he goes. He goes into the jungles of South America and has made some rather significant discoveries in those jungle areas. He is planning to return. He has a trip planned, upcoming trip planned, and we'll get to hear about that in just a moment. But right at this moment, let me welcome Jerry Wills back to the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome, Jerry.
Hey, Kevin. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Jerry, one of the things that I want us to do right off the bat here, you know, in your last appearance here on the show, you talked to us about an expedition that you took. I think it was your last appearance, maybe the one before, but an expedition that you took where way up on top of a mountain you found city, and you found this big chunk of gold, a big gold nugget, and you lost the gold nugget on the way back, and then also the camera somehow malfunctioned, and your film of your not video, but your film, your still camera film of the city that you found didn't turn out. I got an email, and the email was pretty interesting. It said, okay, so this guy is supposed to be a real-life Indiana Jones. And I want to make clear that you didn't say that. I said it. Okay? But it said, so he loses a gold artifact, which, of course, is not the case. It was not an artifact. It was just a big chunk of gold.
Big hunk of gold.
Yep. And his camera malfunctions, and we're supposed to believe this or that. I'm going to let you respond to that, but I want to respond to it first of all. The first email, or the first thing in this email that I want to respond to is where he says, and you expect us to believe this. I don't expect you to believe one freaking thing. I don't believe anything. And if you do, I think you're a fool. It's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of information. Nobody's asked you to commit faith to anything here. All right? And no time ever on this show, never on the Kevin Smith Show, have I called upon you to have faith in anything. If you have faith, have it. I don't believe, nor do I disbelieve. I hear information. I compare it against other information. Some of it is interesting to know. Some of it is important to know. And some information we get in life is absolutely useless. But my response is, nobody called upon you to believe anything. And, you need to get down off of your self-righteous high horse. Nobody here was impressed, intimidated, or in any other way emphasized over this. I do want to also point out that in the movies, Indiana Jones doesn't even carry a camera. You confuse me, my friend, with the convoluted thinking. All right, but Jerry, would you like to respond to that?
Sure, and I appreciate the opportunity to. Let me paint the picture for you. I want to set the stage, if you will. During this particular episode, this event that happened, we had trekked 85 miles back the Tecachi River. If you check Google Earth and look for Nuevo Tecachi, you'll see a river that's running right down through it. Trace that back. We went back about 85 miles. And that's just kind of a rough estimate because GPS, when you're under the canopy, it doesn't really record. So I've gone back with, the software we have and tried to figure it out. This is going back into an area that, from what we were told, no white person has ever come out of there alive. And the reason is because this is an area that's maintained and held by narco-traffickers and by terrorists, the Shining Path. We didn't really know a lot about all that. I never really paid much attention to that sort of thing. Kathy was very inclined to go and see these big boulders, which was really only about 20 miles outside of town back into the jungle. So we went there specifically to take a look at those. Once we got to the boulders, she discovered that they were a map, and so we decided to follow it back, not knowing we were going to go that far. So after 4 days of trekking, and that's from sun up to sundown, we arrived at this place called Mamak. We thought it was going to be a town. Instead, it turned out to be a mud brick building with several rooms. The people there were very gracious, and they cleared out the chicken coop so that we could put our hammocks in there. And they also stored some grain in there as well. So they told us that the city we were looking for was just a couple of hours walk away. And it was a bright sunny day. We were, you know, beyond tired at that point. We'd already walked for 4 days up one side and down the other side of mountains. And so we wanted to see this place. We didn't have a lot of time because we had a group of people who were coming to go on a tour. So we had to get in and get out as quickly as we can, and we hadn't planned on this. The fellow said with great conviction, look, it's 2 hours away. If you'll just come with me, I'll show it to you. So we had the horses, and we left all of our things back at Mamak. Well, 2 hours was not a very good estimate on their part, because they can travel those mountains a lot faster than we can. Bear in mind that on the way there, just before we got to Mamak, a horse had lost its footing as we were going up the side of the mountain, and it had rolled backwards and rolled over the top of me and went off the side of a cliff, and I landed in a tree. Well, it kind of boogered up my hip. So I was in the best shape to be able to walk. So I was mostly riding the horse and hobbling along as best I could afterwards, and that really slowed us up a lot. So we finally got to this lost city by 3. Well, by the time we had gotten to this place, it had started raining. We left there out of camp about 9:30, and by 11 o'clock, we had climbed another 1,500 feet in elevation, and it started raining, and it was just a deluge. And it rained nonstop all the way to this lost city, to this huge place. The things that we had with us, we had no food with us because we were told it was 2 hours. 2 hours in, 2 hours back. We had a couple of power bars and that was it. We had a little bit of water, but we were drinking water out of mountain springs, so that wasn't a problem. We didn't count on getting there at 3 in the afternoon. At 5:30 in the afternoon, the sun goes down and it becomes dark. I tried to use the camera, but because there was so much moisture and because we were at about 10,000 feet, the humidity caused the lenses in the camera to just completely fog over. And there wasn't any amount of cleaning that I could do that would get rid of this problem. Plus, it was a film camera, and the humidity was now inside the camera as well.
Yeah.
I didn't even think to put it in a plastic bag. I didn't plan on getting rained on. Finally, at 3:30, we decided to leave. And it had stopped raining. We made our way as far as we could. On the way up to this lost city, I had found this chunk of gold. It was in the roots of a tree. And had placed it beside this tree on the path that we would be using to come back down. It was getting so cold, and we were absolutely soaking wet, that by the time the sun went down, we were in the jungle without a flashlight. We never intended to be there at that hour without, you know, the things we needed to survive successfully. The gold was passed between myself, Kathy, Coco, who was our guide, and a couple of the other guys who were there, who were all Peruvians. This fellow named Frank was the last guy to have the gold in his hands. And as you're walking through the jungle, you have stobs and roots and puddles of water, and it's really hard when there's light. When there's no light, and you have no flashlight, all we had was a Bic lighter, the only thing that you've got is just taking it very slow. It was so cold that the gold was pulling the heat out of our hands, so we kept passing it, so our hand wouldn't just like freeze up. We were suffering from hypothermia. We were just shaking uncontrollably. Frank, apparently, he hit a root. He tripped, fell down. The gold fell down into the dark and went rolling, and we had no idea where it was. We didn't have a flashlight. It wasn't until about 11 o'clock at night that we finally made it back to Mamak. Up to that point, we just didn't even know if we were going to make it or not. It was really, really scary. So I can understand why someone would have questions like this, but the thing is, if you've never been in that situation, it's really hard to predict how you would react or respond to it. It just absolutely was a terrible situation for Kathy and I. We were the only white people there, and although we were surrounded by people that we trusted, the main guides for this thing were the guys who had been growing the coca fields for the narco traffickers. So we had a lot of trust in them. They did get us back. They did give us a place to sleep for several nights until we were rescued by a helicopter from the military. But, you know, it was just one of those things. It sounds convoluted, but like Mark Twain said, truth is stranger than fiction because fiction makes sense.
Well, another thing for people to think about, and I know this to be the case because I have lived in the jungle. I lived in the jungle for 2 years. And one of the things that people need to think about is, you know, if you have not lived in a jungle, I mean, if you haven't actually lived there, there is absolutely nothing in your experience that you can pin down as a point of reference for anything relative to living in the jungle. For instance, if I tell you that I have met lizards that are 3 feet long and that in the nighttime will come into your house or into your tent and scream, F you, would you believe me?
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you get on the internet and spell it out, you know what I'm referring to when I say F you. This is a family show, so I and we're in prime time, and I certainly am not going to say it. But you go to Google and type in F you lizard. Type the whole word, though. Type in the F you lizard and see if I'm telling you the truth. But my first night where I experienced this, I was in a Mozzie dome. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a tent, but it's made out of only mosquito netting.
Oh,
and
okay.
I'm in a clearing in the jungle, and it's pitch dark. Something heavy falls on the top of the tent, and I'm thinking, oh my God, it's a python. So I very carefully reached in the darkness for my loaded pistol and for my flashlight. And then I turned on the flashlight just as this thing screamed, F you! Now, there are people who are laughing. They think that's absolutely not a true story. It is absolutely the gospel truth. And some of our listeners who have spent time in Southeast Asia have run into that lizard, and they know it's true. They live in Indonesia. They live in Thailand. They live in Cambodia, and they live in Vietnam. So I know some of our listeners have run into the FU lizard. But if you've never, ever lived in a jungle, that's just one experience. If you've never lived in a jungle, there are things about it that you cannot even begin to imagine. It's a different world.
It is a different world, you know, and the thing that we were kind of worried about when we were coming back through the dark were things like, they called them the old men. They're about a 4.5 foot tall monkey with a long gray beard.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of those. In fact, I saw one at a zoo.
Well, there are tribes of them that live in this area where we were, and they were concerned that these guys were going to jump on us and bite us. The other thing was the jaguar. The black jaguar lives up there, and it's very stealthy. It attacks cattle. And just 2 days before we arrived, our host, Marceliano, I believe his name was, he had just killed a 6 foot tall black bear. Now, I've mentioned a black bear to other audiences, and I've had all kinds of hate mail that there's no such thing as a black bear in the Andes. Well, I don't know if there is or not, except that I've got a picture of Kathy standing on its skin, and I ate some of it for dinner. It wasn't a spectacled bear. It was a great big black bear. Now, you know, experts, they're going to tell you, no, that isn't so, it's impossible. You know, all I can tell you is I can point out where you can go to find out if you're curious, because I ate some of it. It was either that or eat cooey, and I don't like guinea pig.
I don't, you know, so. I've eaten just about everything, but that's not something I've eaten. I would suspect that guinea pig or cooey would taste a little bit like rat.
That's what I thought, too. It did look like a rat.
Well, I've had rat. And
it tastes like rabbit.
Yeah, well, I've had rabbit, too. But I got to tell you now, rat's not too bad. It's a little stringy, but it's not too bad. If you're really hungry, it's not so bad.
Well, I'll tell you, the rice and bear meat was... the bear meat, you just chew it forever. It just doesn't break down. It wasn't that good.
I've heard that. I've never had bear meat. Yes, as a matter of fact, years ago, yes, I did. I remember now. It's been a long time ago. Yeah, I did. But, you know, water buffalo is that way. It has a beef flavor, but you can chew it forever.
Yeah, this just didn't break down. And, you know, the thing is about the pictures in the Lost City, there were some pictures on that roll that we did manage to get developed. And there are a couple of pictures that we have, but when you take a look at it, you don't know what you're looking at, because it's just the whole place where we were was so overgrown. The main big city was much higher up, and it was, you know, it was just impossible to really tell what it is you're seeing.
Yeah. Now, do you have any of those on your website?
Well, the only pictures that we had that we thought were still, yeah, there are pictures up there at expeditionsmagazine.com. It's spelled with an X. Expeditionsmagazine.com. If you go there, go into the site, you'll see something about the trip to El Dorado. Just read it. There are pictures there. You can take a look at what we have. I wish I had taken a picture of that big gold nugget. That would have been at least something.
Well, you know, you lost the gold nugget, but Indiana Jones lost the Ark of the Covenant two or three times.
That's true.
Yeah. And he didn't even carry a camera, do you know?
Well, yeah. He just drew pictures.
Oh, my. Jerry, we've got a break coming up in about a minute. I just want to ask you, are you going to be returning to that area in this next expedition?
Not the next one, no. We have to prepare a lot better for that. It probably will be next year sometime, but we are wanting to put this together, and we've kind of let a few people know who might be interested to join us on it. Thing is that those people that are in there, when we went back the second time, we were escorted out of there by special forces from the Peruvian military because a death squad had been sent after us to kill us. They didn't want us back there. We didn't have permission to go in a second time, and we were told we were going to, well, I guess, die. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we were escorted out by these little kids. Looked like little kids. They were like 18 years old, 20 years old in the Peruvian Special Forces. They had machine guns and jungle paint and a whole bit. And, you know, we had to get out of there. But I'd like to go back. I'd like to go back and actually video document this whole thing now that we've got some really good equipment that we could do it with.
All right, we'll talk more about that when we come back from this break. For those of you who are listening over our affiliate in Rogers, Arkansas, you might want to call Brian Odell. He's a musician and pretty good. We're doing some of his music tonight. Tonight is Country Music Night here on Kevin Smith Show. We'll be back right after this.
An old piece of rope held up his pants. As I backed up, he threw up his hands. So I got out and closed the door. and asked him what he stopped me for. He reached down and picked up a burlap bag. There at the city dump, he showed me all he had. A blanket for the colder nights, an old King James and a pocket knife, a worn out watch and a lucky rabbit's foot. A picture in a broken frame, he said, I wish I knew her name. As he gently brushed his hand across her face, what some people throw away. I turned to hide my tear-filled eyes, then shook his hand and said goodbye. Me, it was just a second load, but he held it like a bag of gold. I was too ashamed to tell him at the time everything he was holding was mine. A blanket for the colder night, King James and a pocket knife, a worn out watch and a lucky rabbit's foot. A picture in a broken frame, he'll never know I knew her name. But what I'd give to put that smile back on her face, what some people throw. My heart to hear that old man say what some people throw away.
Welcome back. We're talking with Jerry Wills this evening, and we're talking about his expeditions into Peru. And, well, not just Peru, but other parts of South America.
Jerry, you're planning another trip, another expedition into parts of South America, and I believe it's primarily into Peru, isn't it?
Well, it's Peru and Bolivia. We're going to fly from here down to La Paz, rest for a day, and then we're going to La Paz, the Bolivian Museum of Natural History, where there's apparently some really unusual artifacts that are being stored there. We're going to try to get into the archives of the place and see what they have there. Plus, from there, we're going to a place called the Valley of the Moon, which is a really weird place, just outside of La Paz. Then we proceed on to Tiwanaku and Pumapunku before we eventually end up back in Peru again and at the doorway of Aramamuru, that doorway we discussed last show.
Yeah, and I want us to talk about that again here in just a moment. But now, when you go to Bolivia and you go to that museum there in La Paz, you want to get into the archives to see what they've got. What is it that you suspect they have? What is it that you're kind of looking for?
Well, what I'm looking for is evidence of an ancient civilization that was highly advanced. There are things that have been archived away in that museum and others, like the Smithsonian is a really good example, but you know, the Museum of Natural History in Lima, there's a small museum down in Ica City, where they have these elongated skulls, and some of the skulls are not human skulls. So we want to see if we can get some photos and evidence of either extraterrestrial influence or contact or remains of some sort, or anything that may have been left behind, either in picture form or as items, that might suggest that something extraordinary has taken place down there beyond the obvious things that we go there and see.
Do you think those elongated skulls, because I think probably a lot of our listeners have seen those or seen pictures of those on the internet, and I know I've had them on my website from time to time when we were discussing them on a show. Do you think that those are evidence of extraterrestrials, or are these deformed humans, or are these people who have had their skulls elongated by boxing them in with, I don't know what you call it, but they use boards and they tie it tightly?
Yeah,
and
wrapped.
Yeah. What are we looking at there?
The ones that have had their heads wrapped as an infant are obvious because there are ridge marks where the wraps were placed, where the boards had been placed, and it's evident in quite a few of those skulls, mostly the ones you see that are on display.
Yeah.
There are, however, some skulls on display that if you know what to look for, you can see very clearly that they're not human. And while that may be a bit of a stretch, let me explain the qualifications for it being a human skull. According to the archaeologist that I spoke with down in Ica City, he said that a human skull has certain bone characteristics. There are a certain number of bones in the skull. Any skull that doesn't have that particular bone characteristic, and you find that over and over again, is either an unknown race of humans or they don't know what it is. I'm presuming when I say that it's extraterrestrial, there's no way for me to know whether it is or not. The thing is that there are a lot of rumors, a lot of stories, a lot of folk tales about people coming from the stars, coming there to help them, to give them information, or to rule over them. And these people were the elite. Now, the elite were always buried in certain places. The people, I believe, that mated with the elite and didn't have a child who had that skull deformation, they then tried to mimic that. After generations, that became a sign of elitism and power, and you'd see more and more of it. But in the really ancient places, the really ancient skulls, you find that there's no evidence of head wrap at all, and you find that there's a much different bone structure. It's called Wormians. And these Wormians are characteristically really small little extra patches of bone that go around the back of the head. The other evidence of that is a bone plate in the back of the head that's either divided in two, or a bone plate on either side of the head. Those bone plates, you don't find those anywhere on any people on this planet. It just isn't found. We've looked, and if anyone out there has information contrary to this, I'd really like to know it, because we're trying to find the truth. We want to find out what is the deal with this. So I'm really open to whatever information comes forward. I'm not predisposed in one direction. But these skulls, they are just amazing to look at because and to hold, because they just have a characteristic that you just are not familiar with. And when you see these deformities, which to these people was just that's how their head was shaped, then you can only wonder who were these people, because they weren't really just in Peru. They were in Egypt, they were in North America. They're found all over the world.
Well, yeah, in many of the drawings and carvings in Egypt, we see very clearly that there were people with these elongated skulls. And if I'm not mistaken, aren't there some of the mummies that have been found that have these elongated skulls?
Yes, they have. They even have some of the skulls on display. Which is what we
now, I'm talking about in Egypt.
Well, yeah, in Egypt, I'm pretty sure they do. I've seen pictures, and I believe that the pictures were taken in Egypt.
In When we talk about these elongated skulls in South America, how do they compare in size to human skulls? Would these proportionally, would these fit on just the average sized human skeleton, or would they be taller, or would they be shorter? What are we looking at?
Well, you know, I'm not a qualified expert in that regards, but when I think back about the size of the skull, holding it in my hands, thinking about who it might have been, what they might have thought, the size leads me to believe that these folks would have been larger than 6 foot tall. And Kathy was there, and she saw this as well, and maybe she's got an opinion, and I'll ask her in just a moment if she wants to venture one. But I believe these people were over 6 foot tall.
All right. Now, I don't want to embarrass you, and I don't think it will, but you are not far from 7 feet tall.
Yes, that's right.
All right. The size of the skull, how does it compare to the size of your own head?
Very close.
So they would have been as tall as you?
Well, maybe. Maybe so. I think they had a more slender bone structure than I have. I don't think they were wispy, but they certainly don't appear to me to have been people who were, you know, blocky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big boned people. That doesn't.
Well, you know, the drawings from Egypt show them to be tall and slender. Not frail, but tall and slender, the ones that have those elongated heads.
And, you know, they have complete skeletons of these people in some cases. Not in every case, but there are some complete skeletons, and these skeletons show that these were tall people. Even if you go into the Gold Museum in Lima, they have an exhibit there down in the basement that shows the wardrobe that one of these Inca kings would have worn.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is as tall as I am. I could fit right into these clothes easily.
And just for the record, so that our audience can get a mental picture of this, you're, what, 6'9"?
Yeah, it's pretty close. 6'8 and a half, 6'9".
Mm-hmm. That's over 2 meters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've seen photographs of that clothing that you're talking about. It's pretty amazing. And there are stories, of course, all over South America, not only the stories by the Indians who live there or the natives who live there, but stories by the Spanish explorers who came there and who saw with their own eyes and wrote about giants in the land.
That's true. One of the more frightening examples of that actually took place north of Peru in the southwestern corner of Ecuador. And, of course, this is before there were ever borders, I'm sure. But the story, in general terms, is this.
I tell you what, Jerry, hang on to that because we have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds.
Right.
But I don't want to interrupt the story. I think I know which one you're going to tell. It's quite fascinating. We will be back in just 2 or 3 minutes here, about 3 minutes or so. And we will continue talking with Jerry Wills. I want to hear this story about a giant, and I think I know the one. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Rich wasn't popular when we were in school. He never wore the right clothes. Kids can be so cruel. He didn't play sports. He never had a girl. And back then I wouldn't trade places with Rich for the world. He worked in a factory since the day we left school. Got married, had a family. Don't know how they made it through. Never had a lot of money. Barely had food. And I never would have thought I'd want to be in his shoes. But 20 years later, he's got a wife and some kids. A home in the country with a white picket fence. I thought I had it all, but I saw the light. Rich has everything that money can buy. I want to be rich and have a home in the country. A wife and some kids that mean more to me than money. I want to be rich, have a family who loves me. I want to rock on the porch and go to church on Sundays. I want to be rich. At the 20-year reunion, Rich pulled me aside to share an old dream from high school. He thought it was time. He said, you were always so popular, talented too. And I just gotta tell you, I used to wanna be you. You had everything I dreamed of. I didn't wanna be me. Ain't it funny how time changes things? I wanna be rich, have a home in the country, a wife and some kids. That mean more to me than money. I want to be rich, have a family who loves me. I want to rock on the porch and go to church on Sunday. I want to be rich. Now she's a grandpa, I heard the other day. He can't stop from smiling when he hears that baby's name. He's gonna watch him crawl, gonna see his first step. And that child's first words will be, Grandpa, I bet. And when the sun goes down on the life that Rich led, he'll be proud of everything that he left. I wanna be rich, have a home in the country. Wife and some kids mean more to me than money. I want to be rich and have a family who loves me. I want to rock on the porch and go to church on Sundays. I want to be rich. I want to be rich.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. Well, during the break, always during the breaks, I check for flash messages. Flash messages are emails addressed to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and they're reserved for people who live outside of the United States or Canada. If you live outside of the United States or Canada, you can send me a flash message. Everybody else can give me a telephone call when we open up the phone lines. But it says, with reference to what I said at the beginning of the show, Kevin, how can you say you don't believe anything? Well, I'm talking about within the context of the kinds of things that we discuss on this show. I'm talking about the information that comes across my desk, that comes across the telephone lines, that comes to us through these shows. I don't disbelieve it. I don't believe it. Now, I want to explain very quickly because Jerry is going to tell us an amazing story about giants. And some of you are going to be prone to say, well, I don't believe that. Or I do believe that. And I'm going to tell you that I'm not going to do either. All right? You know I'm an old cop, right? I mean, you can see I'm old. Well, I'm an old cop. How many times have you heard stories about, well, the police, somebody reported something to the police. They didn't investigate it because they didn't believe that he was telling the truth. And because they didn't investigate it, someone was seriously injured or killed. I mean, we've all heard those stories in the news, right? Well, part of the training of a professional police officer is it's not my job to believe. It's my job to ask questions and to investigate. And so that's what we do on this show. That's how I can say I don't believe anything. I listen. I ask questions. We investigate by asking questions, and you get your shot at asking questions in the second hour, all right? So any question you have, feel free to ask it. Jerry,
tell us about the giants.
Well, I don't remember the time frame, but I believe from memory that it was in the 1700s, late 1700s, early 1800s. There was a group of giants. They were all men, and they apparently were like 12, 15 foot tall. They descended upon this small community. It's a fishing community that is in the southwest corner of Ecuador. It's a little peninsula that sticks out. These folks that were there say that they came from the ocean, and they ate everything in sight until eventually there was no more food left. Because they were all men, there was no women, and they wore no clothes. They forced themselves upon the women, killing a number of them and eventually eating some of them as well. I don't remember how that story ends. It's been a while since I read about it. But one of the things that occurred that was a lasting imprint from that occurrence, from that occasion of those giants, is that they needed fresh water. So they dug a well way down through solid rock using techniques that these local people had no concept of. That well remains there today, and it still has fresh water. Now, I haven't been there, but Kathy and I were planning to go there next year to see this for ourselves. It has been reported that they found some of the bones of these giants, and the stories in this really remote place still suggest that this is true, at least true to the degree that the people who keep telling the stories think that it is. What we want to find out is what actually happened. Is this really the case? Were these great big tall hairy black giants really there? The thing that lends some credibility to this story is that we've had a similar report from Captain Cook, who apparently had a giant on his ship as he was sailing across the South Pacific. He had picked up somewhere in South America. This fellow got himself free and he jumped overboard, but Captain Cook recorded this in his ship's log, the entire incident. There were giants that lived up in northern Arizona, just north of here where we are, up in the southern Utah, northern Arizona boundary area. Back in the early 1900s, the last of these giants came lumbering out of the mountains, escorted by the Paiutes, and he walked to one of the mountains, bid them farewell, and he was never seen again. He said he was going to go and die. Previous to that, in the 1800s, there was a group of giants that lived just north of there. And it was...
By the way, I just thought of this. For the listeners who are outside of the United States, Jerry just made a reference to the giant came lumbering out of the mountains escorted by the Paiutes. That is a tribe of Native Americans. That's the name of a tribe of Native Americans. All right, sorry for the interruption. Go ahead.
Well, these other giants, the other story I was going to relate was where the local Indian population, the Native Americans, were at war with these giants. They were eating everything in sight. They had holed themselves up in a cave. So the Indians snuck up there in the middle of the night, put all kind of brush up there, set it on fire, and kept throwing brush into fire until all the giants had suffocated from the smoke. And that has been a well-documented story.
And that happened when, in the 1800s?
Late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually documentation about this. The archaeologists who went into that cave to research the story found that there was a type of net that they had stored away in there, whoever these people were. And this net was very similar in construction, if not exactly the same, as the nets that were found over on the island of Crete. So we don't know where the giants came from. We don't know anything about them. All we know now is that they're just stories. And every time the remains of one of these large individuals is found, it seems to vanish just as quickly as it was discovered.
Well, what do you think the reason for that is?
Well, you know, I've wondered about that for a long time. For ourselves, we had discovered the burial place of a giant up in Utah, and it was on BLM land. Well, you're not allowed.
Oh, that's again, for people not in the United States, that's the Bureau of Land Management, federal agency.
Right, it's federal land, and you're not supposed to go digging on it. Furthermore, if you were to find remains like that and you were to disturb them, it's a $25,000 fine and a term in prison. So it's counterproductive to even go and find these things, because you get in trouble if you do. If you happen to find it and you point it out, like this one person that we know of had done, then a team comes in, it's completely excavated, the remains are removed, and then there's no record that they ever found anything. And it's usually going to the Brigham Young University or the Smithsonian.
Well, what do you speculate is the reason why they cover up this information?
I wish I knew. I haven't got a clue. It just absolutely baffles me. It's information about a race of humans that were here on this planet within the past 200 years that have been completely obliterated, and anytime there's any news of it, it's just erased. It's like UFOs. It's just strange.
Well, maybe they've discovered that perhaps they're not human.
Well, maybe so. I think for sure one of the reasons might be that there's a certain history that's in place and they don't want it challenged. Because some of the things that have otherwise been found in some of these places that suggests a very high level of technical sophistication, these things, they vanish as well.
Well, that's a huge mystery. I've heard, as all of us have, who live out here in Arizona, about the giants, the skeletons that were found in a cave somewhere in the Grand Canyon. And supposedly the Smithsonian Institute was taking over the excavation of it, and then, poof, it was gone. All right, we've got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Years and shoot disappeared, and I've thought you were the best I could find.
Well, I just looked at another one of the flash messages that came in, and it said, Kevin, what's the deal with the country music tonight? You usually play rock music. Well, I play some easy listening music sometimes and rock music sometimes. But I got an email from someone who asked me that said, look, on Steel Eye Media Network, you guys play country music in the mornings. Why don't you use some of that music on your show? So I am. And by the way, one of the artists heard tonight already and will be heard again tonight is Brian Odle in Rogers, Arkansas. I don't know Brian, but we have an affiliate there. So anybody in Rogers, Arkansas that knows Brian, tell him to tune into the show. His music is going to be played again. All right.
Jerry, when we went away, you know, we were talking about why. Why does the information about giants just disappear? It baffles me. I don't know, unless there's some sort of vested interest in perpetuating Darwinism. You know, I just don't know why they would obscure that information. And the fact is, there are newspaper reports of people finding these giant skeletons. There have been drawings. There have been, in old newspapers, early photographs of some of these giant skeletons. But all of that has just vanished. There's, you know, it's like it didn't exist. And I don't know, I have no idea what the answer is to that mystery. It's been suggested to me, as we've discussed this on the show from time to time, that maybe they're extraterrestrials. It's also been suggested to me that perhaps they're not extraterrestrial, but interterrestrial, you know, from inside the Earth. Do you have any kind of speculation about where they may be from?
Well, I don't know where they're from, but you know, all the records that are left behind come to us in the form of myths and fables, you know, just a verbal dialogue between people that tell us a story about their past.
Well, except for the newspaper accounts.
Well, let me tell you a little story about the newspaper accounts. Of course, those are there, and you can find evidence of this just by, you know, going through newspapers looking for it. Eventually, you'll find material like this. The same thing happened for Kathy and I when we returned from Peru from that expedition. We had been in Peru for about a year, and someone brought to our attention a newspaper report from 1909, I believe it was, about a guy named G.C. Kincaid who had returned from a trip in the Grand Canyon. He rafted his way or boated his way down the Colorado and ended up in Yuma. And he's telling these fantastic stories of a cave that was a huge, huge city and mummies and idols and all this stuff. And, of course, the rage at the time was Egypt, so he was attributing everything to being somewhat like an Egyptian culture. But some of the drawings and some of the ways he described it, it didn't really sound Egyptian. It sounded more Asian.
Yeah.
So we figured it would be interesting to look into this further. We spent 3.5 years traveling around in the Grand Canyon, interviewing people, talking to folks. There might even be someone listening tonight who knows what the truth is, maybe someone that we spoke with. Some of the guides down there in the canyon gave us some really valuable clues. At the end of 3 years, one of the things that was a real puzzling item was the fact that there was a reference in that 1909 Arizona Republic, or Arizona Gazette, rather, newspaper article that there had been a story previously. They referred to this previous article. We checked archive after archive, library after library. Every place we looked, we found the papers, but there was no story there. Nothing. Until finally we found a private archive from an old fellow who lives way out in the middle of nowhere. He'd saved all these papers from his grandfather collected them, he'd collected them, and he had this article. He had this newspaper with the article in it that was referred to by the second article, the one that everyone thought was an April Fool's Day joke. This article told the rest of the story. Now, why was it that every other archive that we checked had that article omitted? It just wasn't to be found. Another story was in its place. We don't know. But here it was. Here was the article. So we took a snapshot of it. We put it up online at expeditionsmagazine.com for everybody to see. So you can see for yourself that there really was another article. To make matters more complicated, however, we wanted to find this lost city. And after 3.5 years of searching, we located the entrance to the lost city, and we found out the whole story. And the story basically, and it's a rather complicated story, but in basic terms, there was at one time a natural dam that was across the Grand Canyon. It was 1,800 feet high. In this canyon, these people from Asia had established themselves in a huge underground city that had vents that went up to the surface where they did their farming. In this underground tunnel system that radiated outward like spokes, they had metallurgy and living quarters and just all kinds of different things going on in this thing, as well as a shrine. When the natural dam broke, and it was created by two volcanoes that had spewed lava simultaneously and filled the Grand Canyon with this natural dam and thus creating, you know, a big backwash of water 1,800 feet high, the surface was still another 2,200 feet above the surface of the water. We found an ancient text in Asia that spoke of the Canyon of Light. And they would go there on a pilgrimage to see the Child of the Sun. And in this text, they were talking about going across the ocean, going up what we now know as the Colorado River, stopping at this great wall with a waterfall, going up, getting on another boat, going down even further, and going to the entrance of the city, where there was a port. So the city exists. It's there in the Grand Canyon.
And you found the entrance to it?
Yes.
Did you go into this through the entrance?
It was pretty difficult. It wasn't something we could get all the way into.
Yeah. How do you know that's the entrance to this city?
because there are inscriptions on the walls to the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And the inscriptions on there are basically a greeting to visitors. It's in three languages.
What three languages?
They're very old, actually. One is Asian. One is, what is it called? Etushian, I think. But I'm not exactly sure that that's the name. I believe it's Etushian. It's a Minoan kind of language.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was, what was the other one? I don't think it was Greek, but, you know, something I don't remember what the other language was. I'd have to go back into my notes and see. I haven't referred back to this information in ages.
And so they made a pilgrimage to come see the what? The Child of Light?
The Child of the Sun.
The Child of the Sun. Interesting. Here we call this the Valley of the Sun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Casa Grande ruins that are just south of here are also part of this whole scheme of things. I don't remember the exact nature of how it all interplays, because like I say, it's been quite a few years since I referred back to all of our research notes on that, because this was back in, you know, right after 2000. But we did find in Sedona that there is a red ochre painting way up on a cliffside, and this painting that's up there is the symbol for Shiva. And we have a research team at the time who was scouring through the badlands of northern Arizona and southern Utah looking for clues, and they also found some Asian symbols that had been carved into rocks where apparently the people had ventured out, camped, and then don't know where they continued on to from there. But the whole concept that this continent wasn't visited by the ancients is absurd. There's evidence all over the place that it was.
Okay, now the Child of the Sun, what was that, an idol, or is that a person? Do you know?
Well, according to what we found, it was a person. And it was a childlike person. It may have been a dwarf. But it was a childlike person who was considered the Child of the Sun and probably held the same ranking as the Dalai Lama does in our culture today.
And this Child of the Sun lived in that city?
Yes. The whole city was dedicated to this person, and it was a point of pilgrimage for people from Asia to come here.
Did you find out, because the stories that I've read, is it, I can't remember the guy's name that showed up, said he was from the Smithsonian Institute, and hired a bunch of people. I'm sorry?
Maxwell Jordan.
That's it.
He's English. See, when we started finding out this information, Kathy started doing research on why, because there's got to be a reason for these things to be the way they are. The reason that she came up with started becoming so overwhelming and complex that it was mind-boggling. Just to give you an idea of the strangeness and the mind-boggling nature of what she discovered, the history of the United States that we all know is not exactly what happened beneath the surface. The War of 1812, for example. In the War of 1812, the United States had gone bankrupt. By 1816, the Capitol building had been burnt to the ground. Just a shell remained. In order for, and England wanted the United States back. That's the whole reason for the War of 1812. So what they did in order to maintain control over the colonies was to basically say, look, we know you're bankrupt, you can't continue on this way, we won't take you over, but we will finance you and you will help us. So they gave the United States a huge infusion of money. When they gave them a huge infusion of money, the United States at that point was indebted with a promise that they could pay it back. They never could pay it back. What happened next was that by the time the Civil War started, an industry had grown, pulling the resources of the United States, funneling it up to the northeastern part of the United States, and England, who was at war with everyone else in the world, was needing these resources for cannons, for uniforms, for you name it. And the United States was producing all this stuff, but the United States was not getting rich off of it, as records would very clearly illustrate. The South was really very poor. I mean, these guys were making more money than, you know, they were doing pretty good, but they weren't as wealthy as they thought they should be, because they were funneling their resources to the North. The North was then taking it, making something of it, and sending it to England and showing a profit. The whole reason for all this happening was never known to anyone back then. So consequently, the boys in the South were saying, hey, you know, I mean, we could be manufacturing these things as well. Eventually, there was some disharmony going on, and a representative from England showed up to the South and said, well, you know something? We would like to trade directly with you, but we can't because the laws of the United States prohibit it. Now, if you were to secede, then we could deal with you directly. Well, they said, well, we could never secede. We can't support to fund an army and so on and so forth. They said, well, we could probably help you. So what they did is, in the Bank of Virginia, they deposited a huge amount of money as a promise to the South that they would be well-funded if they sought to secede. Seeing that money in the bank, the South organized very quickly and decided they were going to. And so that's why the Civil War started. But the Civil War was kind of promulgated upon the United States by England, who was trying to divide and conquer.
So, you know, I'm not, at this point, this is the first time I've heard this. So at this point, I'm not prepared to say, you know, as I mentioned before, I believe or disbelieve. But you are aware that you're telling us something about U.S. history that most of us have not heard before.
Right. And it was something that took us completely by surprise. It was just an astonishing series of events that led Kathy to one piece after another after another.
Now, this is documented?
Quite a few people. Yeah, it's documented.
Because, you know, I think most of us are of the frame of mind that the Civil War was fought over the issue of states' rights, with slavery being the focal point. And you're saying that's not why it was fought?
No. That's not it at all. It had to do with merchandising and profiteering. England was promising to buy these things from the South at the same rate they were buying it from the North. And so the South saw a great opportunity if they were their own independent entity.
Uh-huh.
So here's what happened next. As soon as the South decides to announce that they are seceding, within a short amount of time, and I don't remember if it was days or weeks, but England withdrew all that money from the Bank of Virginia and put it into the Bank of New York. And the South was then left with, now what are we going to do? And of course, you know how proud the South is. We're just going to go ahead and fight anyway, because that's what they wanted to do anyhow, so they're just going to go ahead with it. And everyone pledged their finances and their fortunes, and they went forward with it, eventually losing. Behind the scenes, England was trying their best to defeat the United States and bring it to its knees again and default on the loan, in which case they could take over. The reason they wanted this place so badly is because they knew that out here in the Southwest and north up through Utah, up into the Wasatch Mountains, that once there was a huge lake there, and that huge lake had a very huge city that was quite wealthy, full of gold, and they wanted that gold. They also wanted whatever might be there left over from this other civilization that might give them an edge on the rest of the world. At that time, the sun never set on the English Empire. So, Lincoln, knowing this, had a project that he had signed into law. It was called the Golden Capstone Project. As soon as we found this information on the web, it disappeared before we could ever copy it. But we did have a chance to read it. And basically what it said was that Lincoln was aware that there was going to be a war between the United States and England again. And if this were to happen, England was not prepared to come that deep into the country to seize the capital and therefore seize the continental United States. So therefore, he was going to move the capital into this region. Simultaneous to that, Lincoln was withdrawing his membership from the House of MacGregor. They were the Masonic Order over in Scotland. He wanted to start his own Masonic Order here in the United States. Lincoln was a Mason. And of course, as soon as these things were signed into law by Lincoln, and shortly after his death, evidence of it was quickly removed. We did find that one document, and it disappeared. It was in the National Archives. But anyway, Lincoln was murdered. And the reason I believe that he was murdered is because he was withdrawing from the rest of the world to make the United States an independent entity. And I think that's probably what happened with John Kennedy as well.
Although all right, we'll come back to that. Let me go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name? Ah. Well, the telephone number for those who wish to talk with Jerry Wills, you got a question or a comment. The telephone number is 1-623-581-5148. It's at the bottom of your screen here. 1-623-581-5148. And if you have a comment or a question. Now, Jerry, it's not the first time that I've heard this about the JFK assassination. I've heard a couple of things that... one was that President Kennedy had planned to disclose to the public all of the UFO information that we had. And the second thing was that he was going to do away with the Federal Reserve notes and replace them with U.S. Treasury notes, which I remember when I was a kid, we had those.
Yeah, I remember that too.
And so, and in fact, I remember having some silver certificates. Do you remember those?
Yeah, I used to have some.
Yeah. But he was going to replace Federal Reserve notes with U.S. Treasury notes. And then he got assassinated, and that was all rescinded, and we're back on the Federal Reserve notes. Now, I've heard that. I have not done any independent research on that. I have not, I've read what other people have written. I've listened to what other people have said, but I have done no independent investigation on that. But why don't you, if you have, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I really don't have any information on that specifically. The things that I know are what most people probably know who are interested to find out. Federal Reserve is actually a private corporation of bankers over in Europe, England being members of England being part of that, the royal family being part of it. One of the things that we found really interesting that because I look at this, even as Kathy's finding documents, I'm wondering, is this real? One of the things that she found really startled me. You know, when you have a lawyer and at the end of his name it says Esquire.
Yeah.
Do you know what Esquire, what that means?
I haven't really thought about it.
I never did either. I just thought it was some kind of honorary title.
Yeah.
Actually, an Esquire has to report, is dutifully bound to report to the Exchequer, who is dutifully bound to report to the Queen. Strange, but true. So the way this all ties into the Grand Canyon story is that it was known that something was there. Wesley Powell went down the Grand Canyon. He was a one-armed guy, great explorer, climbed up on the sides of the canyon walls, had to be rescued several times. He finally found a guy named G.C. Kincaid, who was a well-known survivalist and trapper and hunter. He was hired, and he was sent down the Grand Canyon looking for something. And the reason they had something to look for there is because all across the United States, they had these assay offices set up, and all the assay offices, as a matter of documented evidence, were supposed to, when they came across something unusual that was gold, they had to report to the United States Treasury. Well, it just so happens that a couple of brothers had helped an Indian and his wife, and in gratitude, this Indian took the brothers to this cave in the Grand Canyon. And in this cave were all these golden artifacts, and the Indian said, "You can take as much as you carry, but don't ever come back here or we'll kill you." They took it immediately to the assay office, and it was turned into money.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Our audience could hear as you were telling this story. We were getting, you were getting some interference, and I was listening curiously to that. Let me say welcome aboard to those who are now online, on the telephone line, assisting us with this conversation this evening. Thank you so much for being here. We're glad to have you. I always enjoy having new listeners. We have a break coming up. Let me go to the phone line again. I don't know if the caller is still on hold. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, if you will, tell us your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark?
I don't know, you guys might have already talked about this. I got into the show kind of late, but I just wondered if Jerry could recount the story about his trip through the portal that sent him through space where he ended up somewhere outside of our universe.
We have not talked about that yet, but we will, and it's called the Gateway at Amaru, is that right?
Aramamuru.
Okay, I'll let you say it. You know how to say it.
Yeah.
Mark, we'll do that when we come back from break, all right?
Sounds great, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. You think there's a connection with all of that stuff and the Grand Canyon because there's supposed to be a city there with lots of gold, right?
Well, there was a lot of stuff there. What we discovered is that the Smithsonian had come in and over 6 or 8 years completely excavated the entire site. The only thing that's left in there now are the things that were just too big to be taken out that had been created inside that were too large to move through the doorway to the passageway.
And what are they?
Well, there's a large statue that's inside there, an Asian statue, and pillars and beams and things like this.
Okay, we've got to take a break. It's always interesting when Jerry Wills is here, is it not? We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Say you're leaving, drove me here. To this stool I sit and think, doing 12-ounce curls and building strength. I did what you said, I finally got a grip. I ain't dropped a drink since you've been gone, gone, gone. Girl, I'm getting good at home. Should have held you as tight as this long neck tonight. Cause I ain't dropped a drink since you've been gone. I still holding fast. Tears like water dripping off the glass. Leaning on this bar, I've learned if I could only make those tables turn, this time you wouldn't slip right through my hands. 'Cause I ain't dropped a drink since you've been gone, gone, gone. Girl, I'm getting good at holding on. I should have held you as tight as this long neck tonight. 'Cause I ain't dropped a drink since you've been gone. Been gone.
And welcome back. As always, I check the flash messages during our break.
Jerry, I want to share a couple of these before we go any further. One of them is, it says, this is from Mario, and he says, "Hi, Kevin, finally your show on Mac. Now I can hear and see you on my Mac. Thanks a bunch." Well, you're certainly welcome. He also says, "I think you need a little more light." I don't want to disappoint you, Mario. Not going to happen. This is more light than I normally work with. All right? This is I like it dark. And until we added video, I didn't have this much light. So that's probably not going to happen. He says, "But I think you need more light and a better camera and at least some nice posters in the background. Just a suggestion. Great show. You are looking at the impoverished surroundings here in my little studio. It takes every penny I can get out of my pocket to do what you see right here. So if you would like to send me some nice posters, Mario, feel free to do so. I'll also be more than willing to accept the gift of a new and better camera. This is one that I bought on the island of Timor up in the capital city. It was the only camera, only video camera, available in the capital city at the time that I bought it, and I had to pay double price to get it. But we're stuck with it until the one you're sending arrives, and I thank you much." I jest, of course. All right, now this one is for you, and it says, this is from Scott. He says, "It's a great show," and he always listens, and thank you for that, Scott. He says, "I have a stupid question for Jerry. Forgive me if you've already mentioned this, but could you tell us if you have a MySpace page or an official website where he can go and read about your adventures?"
Sure. The best website for the adventures, and we have video, and it's mostly a video website. It's expeditionstv.com. It's spelled with an X, expeditionstv.com.
All right, so there you have it, and there's some great video there as well. Jerry has good cameras, I don't. Jerry's a wealthy explorer, and I'm just a poor talk show host, so we have what we have. All right, this one from Sweden. He says, this is from Mustafa, and he says, hello, Kevin and Jerry. I have a question for both of you. Have you seen the documentary called Giants, The Mystery and the Myth on the Discovery Channel? If you have seen it, what do you think about it? I love that documentary, and that was my first documentary on TV, and I still love it.
I've not seen it. I've heard of it. And now that it's been mentioned again, I'm going to seek it out and buy a copy of it so I can take a look at it at my leisure.
Mustafa, I haven't seen it. I have heard of it. Normally, let me say again, normally I don't see anything that's on television. The only time normally that I see something is if I get hit with the flu and I'm not able to do the show, I may watch television as I recover. Or if someone has produced a DVD that we're going to be discussing on the show, I take the time to watch it. Other than that, I really don't have the opportunity to watch. It's not just a choice. I don't have the opportunity to watch TV, so I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it. So, Jerry, you say the Smithsonian Institute went in to the Grand Canyon and removed all of these artifacts over about a 6 to 8 year period. How do you know that?
Well, because it's documented.
Where is that documented?
Well, actually, I'd have to refer that to Kathy, because she's the one that did the research and found the documentation for it. But it wasn't, like, obviously documented. She had to really dig for quite some time to find some records of it. Basically, what the events were, they laid a rail line near there, and they used horses and wagons. And later they used motorized vehicles, very primitive ones, to haul things to the rail lines. Those rail lines subsequently were then taken up and removed, and, you know, there's just the evidence that they were there. We found the tracks in the desert using infrared satellite photography. We found the evidence of the people that had been there, the little things that people drop and so forth. We even found a name tag. The guy's name was Forrester. We found with satellite infrared technology, with those photos, we found the evidence of the railroad tracks and where they met up with another track line that's quite a few miles away. So we located these things. We found where they had put blocks and tackles, where they had built an infrastructure, where they had camped. We found all this evidence. So it was, to us, pretty clear, you know, that what she had found, as far as records go, the Smithsonian having done this, and then us being there and finding these artifacts left behind from the people who had worked there, it seemed pretty clear to us that we were in the right place, and it was after this that we discovered where the doorway was.
Now, I don't want to spend a whole bunch more time on this, because I want us to get back to that story about the portal, and I cannot pronounce the name, but what is it? Amaru?
It's spelled A-R-A-M-U, Aramu, then M-U-R-U, Muru, Aramu Muru.
Okay. Just real quick, because we have a caller on hold, but the cave, the entrance to which you found in the Grand Canyon, you were able to go into it to some degree, to some distance?
One of our researchers made his way into it and provided us with the details of it. It was too hard of a climb for either Kathy or myself. One of the researchers made their way down there. At one point, we did send another team down, but we just about lost those four guys, and it was after that we decided not to attempt it again. It was just far too dangerous.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Terry from Ohio.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, I just wondering if your guest, this is kind of a little bit off subject, but I heard that right now in Egypt at the Sphinx, there is a secret excavation and, you know, ground penetrating equipment that they're doing, and they found several hidden rooms down there, and also with feedback on metal objects, and this is all being secretly done. They got a permit from Egypt, and there's some concern that they, you know, would get in there and get stuff that we wouldn't know about, just like the Smithsonian did to these other places, and replace it with things that would go along with their jive of what they're trying to pass off on people. I just wonder if your guest knew anything about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, don't hang up yet. Let me tell you what I know and then ask you a question.
Okay.
I have heard, and we've had guests on this show talking about the rooms that have been discovered under the Sphinx. Now, one of the people that was on this show that talked about that was Dr. Robert Schock. And he said, well, you know, there is some sort of cavity there, some type of open space there. Now, as far as secret excavations, I have not heard of that. And the question I want to ask you is, where have you heard of that? I want to read about it.
I heard it on Art Bell. I listened to it on YouTube. So,
Now that was several years ago.
No, this is recent.
It was recent?
Yes, he was talking about stuff to this date. When he was talking about this, and he was trying to get people aroused to call 60 Minutes and all this stuff, and raise Cain about this to try and get them to stop doing this until it can be properly done and properly observed, so there's no funny business. And he was talking about things going on, to date. So this is real recent.
Well, what about you, Jerry? Have you heard about this?
The only thing that I heard was, and this is within the past year, that something had been found. And one of the principals that was involved with the discovery was an old friend of mine, Dr. Jim Hertak. And the details were very sketchy, and I've not had a chance to talk to Jim about that at all. I haven't seen him in years.
Okay. Unfortunately, Terry, that's about all we know.
Yeah. This guy, he said the only reason he knew was somebody that's on the inside doing this. They're sworn to secrecy and stuff, but, somehow he's got a connection there that's trying to, feed out information because they know it's wrong. It's quite concerned, that this is, really something... it could be important to all humanity,
Oh, yeah. I certainly concur. I think it would be important. Okay, look, guys, we're into a break. Thanks for the call, Terry. And we'll be right back right after this.
I sleep all day. I'm up all night. Don't close my eyes till the sun's up in the sky. I love the nightlife, it's always been good to me. I love the neon, the honky-tonks, playing pool, drinking beer all night long. I love the nightlife, it's always been good to me. And I've tried that 9 to 5, but I just can't stay away. But when the moon's up in the sky, my eyes open wide, I just can't get to sleep. No, I love the ladies dancing slow. Most of all, I love to take them home. I
love the nightlife, it's always been good to me. To sleep, no, I love the nightlife, it's my life, no other time of day can make me feel this way. I love the nightlife, it's always been good to me. Yes, it has. Oh, nightlife, it's always been good.
And welcome back. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and we're talking about some really heavyweight, mind-bending stuff.
And we're not through yet. Jerry, I want us to talk about the portal. And by the way, I don't know if you're listening to the show in the background, but we can hear me in the background.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me turn the antenna on my head. How's that?
That's good. Well, I can still hear it, but that's okay. Tell us about this this portal, and I think you are including that in this next expedition.
Yes, that's right. And a big hello to my friend Jeff Vance, who's going to be there. I'm going to give him the three tones so he can open it. That's what's happening on this trip. The portal is something that I was able to open, and I think, well, I hope it wasn't by accident, but it seemed like a big accident to me. And it was the result of having been given instructions by this old fellow, an Aymara shaman. His name was Pedro, who lived up at the Lake Titicaca area. And once I used these tones, according to Kathy, because I didn't see it, but according to Kathy, she says that I glowed, shimmered for a moment, and then I was gone. And for me, I traveled to some other place, and I felt like I'd been gone for quite a while. While I was there, there was someone else there. I could hear their voice. I couldn't see them. And eventually, I became very concerned to try and get back. The whole thing was very scary. So they directed me on how to make a return, and I did, and eventually made my way back to the doorway. And at that point, Kathy says that I shimmered, and this glow was there, and I was shimmering, and then suddenly it went away, and I was solid. I had been gone about a minute to her concept of, you know, time duration. For myself, I felt like I'd been gone for hours. It was a really strange thing.
Well, as a matter of fact, the last time you were on the show, I think it was the last time, you shared that entire story with us in detail, and she also came on the show the same night and told us what she had seen, and the next day I got an email from one of the people that had been there with you. Saying that's exactly what happened. She saw the same thing that Kathy saw, that, you know, and so pretty amazing stuff. There's supposed to be some portals out here in Sedona as well. Have you investigated those?
We've been looking for other portals. I don't know that there's one in Sedona specifically, but we do know that there's one that is in southern Arizona out in the desert. And this winter, when it cools off, we're going to be going out there on a privately funded expedition of our own to try and locate this. If any of your listeners are inclined and want to join in, of course, that'd be fun too.
Let me say, for those who have no personal experience with what life is like here, I told them this, I think it was last night, but we're into the part of the year where we will not have a day under 100 degrees until after October. Now, we were really cooled off today. I think we only got to 102. But it's not uncommon for us to get up to 115 degrees. For those of you who are on the centigrade or Celsius system, which is most of the world, that would be about 48 degrees. And no, it's about 43 degrees. We have gotten to 122, which would be about, what, 46 degrees.
Feels like
48
at that point.
48. And so it's hot here, and we're fast approaching the time of the year when we will not even cool down below 100 degrees Fahrenheit at nighttime. So, and it's going to be this way through October. So that's why Jerry said in the winter when it cools down. Now, when it cools down, our winter here is about like springtime in other places. It's we don't get very cold here.
It's true. But that's why we're going to do it probably November, December, is to go down there. It's a very harsh region, very rough region. But we have, again, another newspaper article that is intriguing, and we're going to try to find what this article is referring to.
Now, this article seems, I've read the article, and it tells a story of a doorway that seems to be time travel, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you can see other things, other times through this doorway. It's a large arch, actually. And you can see a totally different world through there when you come up on it and take a look.
Are you nervous at all? Is there any trepidation at all about going to these doorways and experimenting?
Well, yeah. I'm not willing to go back through the one at Aramamuru, not until I understand it better. These guys that are on the trip with us, and anyone who wants to join is welcome to join us, except of course for alphabet agencies or those with vested interests in criminal affairs. But the guys that are with us, they're adamant they want to try it, and I'm not going to keep them from trying it just because of my own initial fears.
Well, what happens if they go through the doorway and never come back?
Well, they have to sign a release that they're going to go through the doorway, and if they don't come back, it's not my fault.
Okay. Because you know you're going, you know, if that happens, you're going to be investigated.
Yeah, I know, but we're going to document it with video as best as we can, and there'll be other people there that'll be watching as well. So it'll be a very well documented event if it does happen.
Are we going to be able to see this video?
Oh yeah, you know, that's the whole thing with Expeditions TV. If we find something and we can document it, I bring it back, I put it up on the internet, and the whole world can see it.
Now, one of the places that you said you're going to take folks on this expedition, and again, I know I will say the name wrong, but is it Punapuku?
Yeah, Puma Punku.
Puma
really,
Punku.
Yeah, Puma Punku.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 5 kilometers from Tiwanaku in Bolivia, and it's just another ancient site that is all in shambles now. But the stones that were used in its construction are just gigantic, huge, huge, huge slabs of stone. And
up on top of a mountain, isn't it?
Well, no. This is on the Altiplano, so the site itself is at about 13,000 feet.
Yeah, the high plains.
Yeah, the high plains, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And where were these stones quarried?
Well, I don't know. I suspect that they must have been quarried nearby. You know, at Tiwanaku, one of the strange things about that, just like the Temple of Time and Space, there are very large structures that are made of basalt. And the basalt at Tiwanaku was quarried hundreds of miles away from Tiwanaku. And it was brought there in one piece, having been finished. At Pucar, which is the Temple of Time and Space in the Andes, and that's on the Machu Picchu portion of our trip.
Yeah.
That is another huge piece of basalt, and we've looked and not been able to find any basalt around there at all. So it has to have been brought there.
And Machu Picchu is in the mountains.
Yes, it is. It sits atop a mountain. It's beautiful.
All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Jerry, I just want to say that if I could come along with you, I'd volunteer to go through that doorway just to see what it was.
Well, which one? The one in Peru or the one in southern Arizona?
The one in Arizona is closer.
Kevin, thanks for the call, man. We're coming up on the end of the show. I'm surprised you weren't first tonight.
I made it a point to be the last one tonight.
Oh, you did? All right, man. Thanks for the call. Jerry, I'm getting floods of email here from people who are ecstatic about the show tonight. Absolutely love it. It's always interesting and always a joy to have you on the show. I appreciate you for being on the show. And I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Can I just say before we leave that we've got this trip going to Peru. If there's anyone listening that would like to join us, we do have some spaces available, and we'd love to have you come along.
They can get in touch with you through your website?
ExpeditionsTV.com. Just look for the link that talks about the trips.
All right. Thanks for being with us. Stay on the phone with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. I wish we had more time, but we don't. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. Now you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.